The two defining events of the Jewish people have to be the Exodus and the exile. Exodus is a Greek word consisting of ex, which means to go out, and hodos, the road. So ex hodos is literally to go out on the road. In English, an exodus is the departure of a large group of people. In the Bible, the Exodus refers to that time when the Israelites fled slavery in Egypt. The word exile means expulsion from one's native land by authoritative decree. It comes from the Latin word exilium, which means banishment. The biblical exile took place in the 6th century B.C., when many of the Jews were captured and carried off to Babylon in the Babylonian captivity or Babylonian exile. The theological result of this event was that the Jews discovered that God did not reside just in Jerusalem, but could be found with God's people everywhere, even in places like Babylon. The Exodus, on the other hand, would have taken place about 1,000 years earlier, about the year 1500 BC, give or take a couple of centuries. And the account of the Exodus is located in the second book of the Bible, which we also call Exodus. But Exodus is actually the Greek name for this book. In Hebrew, the name is literally, "These are the names." I don't know the Hebrew word, but the translation is "these are the names" because the book begins with these words, "These are the names of the sons of Israel who came to Egypt with Jacob." You will recall the story of Jacob. I preached several events in Jacob's life over the past couple weeks. And that story actually begins back with Abraham. Abraham's son was Isaac. Isaac's sons were Esau and Jacob. Jacob conned Isaac, his father, into conferring upon him his brother's birthright, and then Jacob fled the country. Jacob's gone for 20 years, and in that time, he builds up a family and amasses a fortune. He returns to his homeland, and along the way, wrestles with God, and God renames him Israel. Jacob had 12 sons. One of them, Joseph, was clearly his father's favorite and something of a conceited jerk. And because of this, his brothers staged his death and sold him to a caravan of traders. Traitors. The lesson here is always be nice to your brothers. They may sell you. Joseph ends up in Egypt and works his way up to become the head administrator to the Pharaoh. His foresight and planning enabled the Egyptians to weather a devastating drought and famine. Joseph is a hero, and he brings his brothers and their families, they've made up by this time, to live with him in Egypt. The Israelites, as they are known, thrived in Egypt for generations until, as we read in the book of Exodus, these words. "Now a new king arose over Egypt who did not know Joseph." In other words, the Israelites were no longer viewed favorably as the descendants of the great Joseph, but instead were viewed as an immigrant population to be exploited. The Israelites were enslaved and set to forced labor, building cities for the Pharaoh. And this continued for 300 years. In this story, we are introduced to Moses. The Pharaoh at the time feared that these Israelites among them are becoming too numerous. They are a threat to us. They will take over our way of life, he says. And so he orders the murder of all newborn Israelite boys. It is during this time that Moses is born, and his mother is able to hide the baby for a couple of months. But eventually, in desperation, she waterproofs a basket and floats the child down the Nile, past where the Pharaoh's daughter is bathing. The daughter sees the child, and she takes it for her own. She names him Moses. Moses grows up in the royal court, and one day he observes an Egyptian beating a Hebrew. Moses intervenes and kills the Egyptian and hides the body in the sand. When word gets out about this, Moses flees across the desert to the land of Midian. One day, in Midian, he is sitting by a well. The seven daughters of the priest of Midian come to draw water from the well for their animals, but some shepherds drive them away. Moses comes to their defense. The girls return home and tell their father about the Egyptian who had helped them. The father asks, "And you left him there? Go get this man. Invite him to dinner." He's got seven daughters. He's just thinking ahead. Moses accepts the invitation. He stays with the family and eventually marries one of the daughters and then goes to work for his father-in-law as a shepherd. Meanwhile, back in Egypt, things are getting worse for the Israelites. They cry out in their oppression and God takes notice. And God remembers the covenant made with their ancestors, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. At the same time, Moses continues working for his father-in-law. And his shepherding takes him far from the land of Midian, beyond the wilderness, we're told, to Horeb, which is described as the mountain of God. We will encounter this mountain later when it is known as Mount Sinai. While shepherding his flock on this mountain, Moses notices a fire in a bush. Well, that's nothing unusual. Maybe there were other shepherds camping here. Maybe lightning had struck the bush. But Moses looks closer and realizes that while the flames envelop the bush itself is not burning or consumed. Moses decides that this requires further investigation, and so he goes closer. And when God discovers that God has Moses' attention in this, God calls out to Moses and calls Moses by name. And Moses responds, "Here I am." God says, "Come no closer. Remove your sandals. You are standing on holy ground." God goes on to say, "I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. I have observed the misery of my people who are in Egypt. I have heard their cry on account of their taskmasters. I am aware of their sufferings, and I have come down to deliver them from the Egyptians, to bring them up out of that land to a good and broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey. I have seen the oppression of my people, and I will send you to Pharaoh to get my people out of Egypt." Moses hears this, but he's not buying it. "Who am I that I should stand before Pharaoh?" Moses asked. Remember, Moses grew up in the royal court. He knows who can go before Pharaoh and who can't, and he's not on that list. And God tells Moses, "I will be with you. And when you are done, you shall worship me on this mountain." Moses then asks God another question. Moses says, "Let's say I do go to the Israelites, And I tell them, the God of your ancestors has sent me. And they ask, what is this God's name? What shall I tell them? You see, it's been a long time since the people talked to God. And God answers Moses saying, tell them, I am who I am, has sent you. When we think of Moses, we think of a prophet, a holy man, a leader, someone who has God's ear, someone whom God gave those commandments twice. But it is important to remember that Moses was less than perfect. Moses led a life between lives. He was born an Israelite, but raised in the royal court of Egypt. At that well in Midian, the daughters identified him as an Egyptian, despite his fleeing that country. Moses is in Midian because he killed someone. But God calls him anyway. God calls Moses to go back to the Pharaoh and plead the case for the Israelite slaves. Unfortunately, the Israelites have largely forgotten God. So Moses asks for God's name. And this is a sneaky move on Moses' part, because to know a name is to have control. But God's not giving in to that. God's not having any of that. And God tells Moses, I am who I am. The Hebrew is intentionally vague here, and that name could also read, I will be who I will be. One scholar suggests that he likes to interpret the name as, I am who I will be. God is not a thing. God is not a name. God simply is. God is the great I am. And this is the one who is calling Moses from the fire, from the holy ground, from God's mountain. Moses, we know, Moses will return to Egypt. He will not be alone, though, because I am promises to accompany him. God is not sending Moses out alone. God will be with him. Does God need Moses for this task? No, God doesn't need Moses, but God calls Moses. Moses is not perfect. He's not trained. He's not eager. He's not eloquent. But he is called. So my question for you is this. What has God called you to do? What task has God challenged you with? Are you the perfect fit for the job? Are you eager? Have you heard the call and are now just trying to figure out how to tell God, no, I'm too busy? Isn't there someone better, more experienced, more talented, more willing? But what has God called you to do? God sees the misery of the people, the need, the sorrow, the hurt. And just as God called Moses, God calls others. Less than perfect individuals, such as us, to ministries of healing and compassion and love. What have you been called to do? What is that thing that matters that God is calling you toward? And just remember that when you say yes, God will be there with you. Amen.